Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 225 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a great show planned for you this week. Oh, man. The week of December 8th, 2014, Ben Todd of the band Lonesome Shack will be joining us here in the backyard shortly. And it's a really good chat, man. Really good chat with Mr. Ben Todd, dude. This guy is seriously talented. Yeah, Lonesome Shack, holy shit. I saw them for the first time at Timber Music Festival this past summer. And beautiful Carnation, Washington, they played the campfire stage, man, and it was great. Oh my God, it was so good. They put on a fantastic show. This is not the type of music that I am normally like. Normally, this is not the type of music that I would just put on a record player and sit and listen to all day, right? But there's something about Lonesome Shack, man, that just comes across as so genuine. I love it so much. And this, the album that we're going to be featuring music from today, called More Primitive, is available now at lonesomeshack.com. And I really highly suggest you go get a copy of this. This is Lonesome Shack. Let me try to explain this to you guys before you hear it. This is the type of music that you feel in your bones, right? I mean, it really hits you on a different level, I think. And it's like Lonesome Shack is the 20 miles of dusty dirt road that you cruise down in an old pickup truck on like a hot summer's day. Right? Does that make sense? Does that conjure any good I don't know. Visuals? What are you, taking acid? Come on. Really? Yeah. No, seriously, though. This is the feeling that I get. It's raining, guys. It is raining so hard here in Seattle right now. As I record this right now, it's Monday night. Yes, this is late. We'll get into that in a second. But as I record, this is raining so hard. And I'm listening back to More Primitive, this album by Lonesome Shack. And it's putting me in a better place. Let me tell you, this is Americana or roots or whatever you want to call it. Backyard blues at its best, folks. And it's right here, located right here in Seattle. We have a great chat coming up for you with Ben Todd of the band. And I hope you guys enjoy it. I had a wonderful time meeting him and getting to talk with him. So I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Let's see. Yeah, like I said, this is coming late. It's the holidays, people, and I find myself like getting into that mode of just not wanting to do shit. I do not want to do anything. I want to lay on the couch. I want to admire our Christmas tree, and I want to play this little Star Wars game that I have on my phone. That's all I want to do. And I want to watch my daughters dance around to Christmas music. That's what I want to do right now. I don't want to spend any time doing this show or doing other things other than just being lazy as F. You understand. You understand, right? Yeah, but we've got to do this show, right? Because you guys emailed me. I got 10 emails today. Where's the show? You know, I realize that we started this thing. You know, you start something like this, you feel like you have ownership over it, but then it becomes everybody's, right? And so I shot back an email today saying, whoa, chill out to a listener. And listener, if you're listening, I didn't mean to do that. I am quitting smoking and very lazy and, you know, I didn't take that too well. So I apologize. You know who you are. You know, I mean, this thing has become a part of people's week. And I need to realize that, and maybe I should, you know, stop being so lazy and just get it done, man. Just get it done. Come out here, talk on the microphone. How hard is that, right? It's not. It's not hard. And you know what? I'm going to be better about it. And listener, you know who I'm talking about. I apologize for the email. I sent you a nice email too, so I hope you read that and respond. So anyway, okay. Let's get down to it, right? We talk with Ben Todd about his luthier skills. He's a luthier. Yeah, he builds guitars, man, and fixes guitars and does all that stuff. It's amazing. It's amazing. This guy is the real deal, man. Lonesome Shack gets their name from an actual shack that Ben Todd lived in for like 3 or 4 years. Yeah, put that in your brain. Put that in your brain, man. We're going to talk about that coming up. In the middle of nowhere. He was in the middle of nowhere. In a shack with his girlfriend for like 3 or 4 years. It's an amazing story. Okay, let's see. Off of their album, More Primitive, this is Lonesome Shack. The song is called Head Holes, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Special guest this week, Ben Todd of the band. All right, be back in a moment. I've had some unique experiences at that store.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you heard that before from other people?
Yeah. From a couple people.
Yeah. There was a guy that was working there that just did not like me at all.
Okay.
I don't think he liked many people. And that was probably maybe 8 years ago or something like that.
Maybe just before.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe it's better now because you're working there, Ben.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you guys always have the best gear.
I know. And I grew up in Bellingham, and uh-huh. I and I went there as a kid. That's where I got my first guitar.
That's where I got from my first guitar,
that's
too.
That's where, yeah. They always have the cool vintage stuff.
Right. And that acoustic guitar, I don't know if you came in the front door in the main house, but that acoustic guitar in the living room is from, it was a Dent and Scratch.
Okay.
And they had it at Trading Musician for like $250. And it's an amazing, you know, Blue Ridge acoustic. And that was my first, that was my first guitar. And I got it at Trading Musician. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a staple of the community.
It is. Yeah.
Except they used to be assholes.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that about, mainly about a couple people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And I do repairs, so I don't even deal with the public for the most part.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so you don't even see it happen.
Yeah.
You just say, you're just in the back. They keep you in a, like,
I'm
a,
in the
a,
shop.
A little cage in the back.
Yeah. You wouldn't even know I was there.
That's right. Ben Todd from the band Lonesome Shack joining me here in the backyard. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming out. This is a real treat.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude. I've been listening a lot to your album More Primitive, which is out now, by the way. And you can go and get it, get yourself a copy at lonesomeshack.com. And it's really good. It's very rootsy. It's not like, I was thinking this today when I was listening to a couple of the tracks, like, this is not something that I have listened to, like, this type of music I haven't listened to in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can take Tom Waits in, like, small snippets.
Mm-hmm.
But this is more, I think, this has more structure to it. Your guys' stuff has more structure to it than I think Tom Waits does.
Not as out there.
Not as out there.
Yeah.
Not as out there. Yeah. And it's perfect, man.
Cool.
Yeah. Where did you record this?
We recorded it with our friend Johnny Goss, who has a home studio in West Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Called Dandelion Gold.
Awesome.
Yeah.
He did a fantastic job. Did he produce it too?
He did a great job. I guess you could say that. We recorded it all live, so we didn't do vocal tracking and we did one guitar overdub on one song, but otherwise he dialed in all the sounds and pretty much just...
So you sang it live too?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive.
So it was all... I think we, you know, for a lot of the songs we did a couple takes and picked which one we liked best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on.
And so he was responsible for getting all the sounds and... It was a live recording for the most part.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
Well, it comes through in this too because it's very like I said a little bit earlier. It's very cohesive. It's got a very cohesive sound. Everything fits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, you know, I've always felt that that's really important. Like recording live instead of doing just multi-tracking,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the drummer plays one part, then the guitarist plays one part, then the you know, bass player plays one part or something like that. But if you're all in the same room, well, sometimes, most of the times the drummer's not going to be in the same room, but you're all going to be there playing it together.
Mm-hmm.
Like that always, it feels better in the studio when you're in the studio doing it. And I think it comes across way better in the recording as well. Do you feel the same way?
I feel that way too.
Yeah. And have you always done that?
We have as a band, we've always recorded live. This was the most, produced in a sense in that we had a person recording us mm-hmm. and in the past we'd always done self-recording. We'd do our record before More Primitive, City Man, was recorded live at Cafe Racer in one evening. So it's all...
Is that one of the ones that you brought? Oh yeah, it's right here.
That one.
Sweet.
Is all... We brought in my my tape recorder, set up a bunch of mics and record it. We played our
like just
set.
On like a four track.
It's a 8-track reel to reel.
Oh,
an old Tascam 80-8. So we set it up and we played the set twice through and picked the better of the two takes over the course of one night. And we played some other stuff here and there. And that one posed some problems with,
oh, I'm sure
sound issues, but
yeah
it's kind of now the way it is like the final product is kind of a blown out, like super live, crusty sound. But
well,
I think
cool.
I think it works for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you guys definitely have a unique live sound. Your show at Timber Fest this last summer was awesome. It was so great. You guys pretty much, I think you closed out the campfire stage, right?
Jay Maskus played after us.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay. That's right. And that was so, I hadn't heard you before that. Like I don't think I even knew you guys existed.
Uh-huh.
And then you just blew my mind. Like I was blown away by your performance. It was so good and it was so tight. Everything was so tight and just sounded so great. And just being in that setting too, what did that feel like for you? Like being
amazing.
Sold out crowd at a
it
festival.
It was packed. That was just such a great experience. There was so much energy coming in and, it was fun because it was set up to be a sit down and listen campfire type of scene.
Sure. Sure.
And a lot of our
they
music
even
is
had
kind
fake
of
fake campfires on either side of the stage. Yeah.
Yeah. And we like to get people dancing so that was tough at first, but it seemed to develop and there was a little dance crowd in front.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was cool to see that spread of people up into the seats back into the hill.
Yeah.
And just the lighting in there was so pretty and great festival all around.
Yeah,
so and
yeah.
to feel it was like a culmination of the whole festival. And
is that one of your favorite shows? Will that go down as one?
Definitely.
Of your
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, and it was similar to our experience at Dobe Fest the year
before.
Oh,
you before. Played there too.
We did. And we played in the yoga studio.
Oh, wow.
Have you been to Dobe Fest?
I've never been.
So there's a main stage
right.
that has most of the shows. And then at the end of the night, they have a show in the yoga studio, which only holds 80 people, I think.
Okay.
So it gets filled up regardless of who's playing, I think.
Yeah.
And that was also a similar experience that we were getting ready to play and there was no one in the room. And then they open the doors and suddenly, you know, I turn around and there's the place is packed and there's all these people pushed up to see the music and just so much energy coming back to us. And that was also a highlight gig for sure.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. That sounds awesome, man.
Yeah, it was
Artist Home has a way of cultivating these amazing festivals and amazing concerts too, because they do the stuff on the beach during the summer here in Seattle as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if have you guys played one of those?
No, we haven't.
Oh, okay. So do you get nervous on stage in front of all those people?
No, not usually.
No?
Not in that situation. Sometimes, well, the more awkward shows are more nerve-wracking.
Like what kind of awkward show?
Oh, maybe when you're playing to a
five group. Drunk people?
Yeah, like a smaller or like five people who don't know where you're coming from and they're like, what the hell is this? Like, what are you doing?
Where's Tom Waits?
Yeah. But no, usually when there's a big crowd and people are there to see music and they're excited about it, I don't get too nervous. Maybe prior to the show, but once it all starts, it's like, it just feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. I like that. So where did music start for you, man? Like you said, you grew up in Bellingham.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Born and raised.
I was born and raised in Bellingham.
Yeah.
And I started playing with my brother who's 2 years older than me. He plays drums, not much now, but he started playing drums. I started playing bass. We played together and we got together with a guitar player and we had some bands. You know, when I was 12, 12 or 13.
What kind of music were you playing at that age?
We're playing like hardcore.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
yeah.
Kind of punk stuff. And then we started a band with a buddy of mine, still a good friend, Matt Knowles. And that band played kind of Minutemen influenced punk with real short songs, like blast energy, weird changes.
Yeah.
Not quite like mathy, but some weird stuff going on in there.
Nice.
And we did a little tour with that band. That band probably lasted like 2 years.
How old were you?
I was 16, 17.
And you went on tour at like the age 17, of 16, 17?
I think I was 18 by the time we toured.
Really?
Maybe 19. I was still underage. I remember that. But and we booked the tour through Book Your Own Fucking Life.
Okay.
I don't know if you know that. It was like
no.
It was back then. It was a zine format of venues, a list of venues and contacts, kind of in DIY punk rock.
Okay. What year are we talking here?
This was 96.
96.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was our tour 96 summer. And I think
that must have been so much fun.
It was. It was a blast.
Oh my God.
But it was a funny tour. It ended up being more of a crazy road trip. Cause we were gone for I think a month and a half.
Yeah.
And I think we only had 12 or 15 shows.
That's
confirmed.
It.
Yeah.
For a month
so,
and a half.
Yeah.
How does that work out?
Well, you know, monetarily it didn't work out at all.
No.
But we picked up a lot of people on the way and
good.
Yeah, we had friends to stay with everywhere.
Oh, okay.
In most places. So like, you know, cities we'd go to where we had people to stay with and we'd hang out there and it was the least organized tour I could imagine. But,
yeah.
But it was a lot of fun.
A month and a half and you only had about 12 shows.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we went all the way to from Bellingham down the West Coast and over to New Orleans and then back up the Northeast.
Wow.
And then back over to
Washington. Now, were you still like booking shows on the road?
We were working on some shows.
Yeah.
We were trying to get stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We had some things fall through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like you'd book a show with some guy that you didn't know and he was he'd give you an address and a time and a date. And then with one instance, we showed up to this guy's house.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, the show has to be canceled. My parents are back. I expected them to be gone, you know, this weekend so I could throw a show without them being here.
Oh, you're kidding me.
But now they're here. I can't do the show. So the show is canceled.
And you had no idea it was a house show.
No, we had no idea.
Oh my God, that'd be heartbreaking. I would be I'd be heartbroken and totally pissed. Where was that?
Oh God.
What state was that in?
I feel like it was in Ohio.
Really?
Yeah.
So then on top of that, there's not a whole bunch of places for a punk band to play in Ohio either, is what I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was hard to find gigs. But...
Oh my God. So were you the youngest kid in the band?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were 18
yeah.
years old?
Yeah. I think
around
so.
That, mm-hmm. Around that age? How old was everybody else?
My brother was 20.
Oh, okay.
I think it was a 3-piece band. And I think Matt was a year or two older than my brother.
Oh, okay. Okay. So he could at least buy beer.
Yeah. Buy beer. That was all set.
What did your parents think about young Ben Todd going on a month and a half tour? I guess like at that point, you're probably out of high school, right?
Yeah.
18 years old.
Yeah, I was out of high school. I think my parents are really supportive.
Uh-huh.
So I think they were probably skeptical about it.
I'm sure.
But they were also supportive of us following that dream
and trying it out.
Yeah,
that's cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
What do your parents do?
My dad's a dentist.
Uh-huh.
He's almost retired. And my mom is an artist.
Okay, so she was probably more of the person that was like, yeah, go do your thing, right?
I think so.
I'm picturing
yeah.
Dennis dad. Dennis dad, any type of doctor dad is going to be like, I don't like this.
Well,
there's no structure here.
I think he was hoping that one of us would go to dental school
really?
Or something. Yeah.
Is that like a, is that a thing? Is that a thing with like doctors and dentists? Like they all want their kids to like follow in their footsteps? Maybe lawyers too.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, maybe by example they're like, this is a great life, you know. This is
sure.
Yeah. And my dad really enjoys his work, so I think we did things with him to get familiar with his trade.
Yeah.
So
like
we
what?
Well we both worked in his office.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Doing what?
We were sterilization technicians. So it was kind of like a job that he created for us, you know, because we didn't. I went from washing dishes to being a sterilization technician.
I love how it's like sterilization technician.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it sounds so professional.
So it's a job that usually the hygienists or assistants do, but we were in the back throwing the tools in the ultrasonic thing and then the autoclave and
making sure
all the trays were set up and mostly reading a lot and hanging out and drinking coffee.
Oh, good.
But we got to see how things worked in the office. And
yeah.
But my brother is an artist and he teaches digital art at a community college in Phoenix now.
Uh-huh.
And I also pursued art for a while. And then
did you go to college?
I did. I didn't get a degree,
uh-huh.
but I went to Evergreen.
Okay. In Olympia.
Yeah. For a bit. And then I went to UNM in Albuquerque.
Oh, wow.
For a little while, too, taking art classes.
Cool. So you lived in New Mexico for a little bit.
I did.
What was that like?
It was cool. I was there for 8 years in New Mexico.
Really?
4 years in Albuquerque and 4 years in out in the middle of nowhere.
What made you choose that place?
It was a few things. Like, my mom, I think, was always fascinated with the Southwest,
uh-huh.
and she planted that seed for me and my brother to that interest in that area. And growing up in Bellingham, you kind of want to dry out, I think, after a while. You want to get somewhere sunny. And,
anywhere in Western Washington.
Yeah.
Totally.
So that was part of it. And then when we toured, when we were younger, going through New Mexico was one of our favorite places. We had a great show.
Really?
And just fell in love with the country there and some of the people we met. So I ended up moving back there with the guitar player and singer from that band.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We moved together back there to Albuquerque and kind of bounced around in the state. But he left and went to New Orleans, and I stayed in Albuquerque.
Cool. So what were you going to school there for? Like,
well, I took
what kind of art?
I was trying to take classes that I couldn't. I didn't have the equipment to do at home, so I was doing small metal work, like jewelry making.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And screen printing, printmaking stuff.
I was always fascinated with that class, the metalwork class, at the school that I went to. Like, you'd always see it like displayed, you know, all their like finished things displayed in these little glass cases. I remember there was this big, like finger long, like ring that was a dragon. And it was all, you know, I mean, it was super detailed and everything. It would bend with your finger, you know, and oh man, it was so cool. And I was like, that's what I want to do. And then I never took the class.
Yeah. It's fun. I really enjoyed doing that.
What kind of stuff did you make?
I made a ring
that
I'm actually wearing.
Oh, wait.
This ring here.
Let me see that.
I'll pass it over to you.
Wow.
And I made a box and a necklace.
That's cool, man. Is that made out of silver?
Yeah, that's silver.
Wow. Right on.
I made a cool little nickel, or no, was it? It was zinc box that opened up and had like fabric inside, like a little treasure box, and I gave to my mom, but it was all like decorated around, and it had a bear claw as the the handle on the top. And
yeah,
that turned out cool. And the other thing was a necklace, like a chain necklace, where I soldered all the chain links together and had some beads. No, it was a loose necklace, I created the chain.
Gotcha.
Rather than like, you know, getting a pre-made chain.
Wow, that's gonna take a long time.
It's a little tricky, yeah, because you got to use like different temperature sensitive solders along the way, so that you don't melt the ones that you just did.
Right.
But that one had one of my wisdom teeth in it.
Did you give that to your mom too?
No.
Okay.
No, I still have that. It's a little grisly even for me to wear.
Oh my God. Did your dad take that out?
No, a friend of his did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
He didn't want you to hate him for the rest of his life. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was an intense procedure, man. The wisdom teeth pulling was awful for me. I don't know how it went for you, but mine were impacted, and so they had to like literally chisel them out.
How old were you?
My skull. Like 16?
Okay.
Yeah. And
all four of them?
It was brutal, dude. Yeah, all four of them. Yeah. They had to chisel them out. They had to break them apart.
So you were probably swelled up like a chipmunk.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Yeah. Awful. Awful. Yeah.
I got lucky because mine were just barely coming in.
Oh,
and
really?
they hadn't caused any issues, and they just dug them out, and then I was okay.
Gross.
Yeah.
And then you kept them to make jewelry later on. That's insane. Let's do this. Let's go with our second musical break. We're featuring music from the band Lonesome Shack, Ben's band. The album is called More Primitive. Once again, you can get it right now. It's available now, right?
Yeah.
Came out like May 20th.
Came out May, yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It's a fantastic album. This song is called Old Dreams off of the album More Primitive, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Stay with us. I met you for the first time. I got by. I got by. I got by. But it seemed like you were always on my mind. Occupies my time. Keep an old dream alive. touring the country. People are turning you away at the quote-unquote venues that you're going to. And you're playing punk music. How does that translate into what you're doing now? Where does this type of, like, I don't know, what do you call it? Like Americana? Roots
yeah,
music?
Yeah, I guess so. It's what I do now is definitely strongly influenced by early blues.
Sure.
And hill country blues and specific artists that I love a lot.
Like who?
John Lee Hooker.
Yeah.
Junior Kimbrough.
Yeah.
Slim Harpo.
I don't know that one. I don't know him.
He's a swamp blues guy. He's swamp like from blues. New Orleans, but played. You may have heard the Rolling Stones cover one of his songs because they did.
What song?
They do a Slim Harpo cover on Exile on Main Street.
Okay.
I don't remember which song that is. Hip Shake or something like that. But
okay.
Yeah, they were very influenced by him and
he's a New Orleans guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Slim Harpo, he's one of my favorites. Yeah, I think it's hard not to like him. He's got there's an LP out called Rainin' in My Heart that's really uh-huh. good. Yeah, collection of singles that he put out.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Who
check
else?
That out. Fred, so where did these influences come from, though? Like, where did you first hear this type of music?
I started getting into this music when I was living in New Mexico.
Really?
And I think it was one of the first things that turned me on to that genre was there's a really great video store in Albuquerque called uh-huh. Alphaville.
Okay.
That had
still there?
Document. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had music videos about, like, there's a documentary, or it's mainly just a video of a performance of Sun House and Book of White. It happened to be in Seattle where the show went down, but it was staged, you know, well lit, several cameras going.
Sure.
But this was maybe 1960. It's black and white.
Okay. So it could have been like the Moor or something.
Yeah, I don't remember what venue it's in or where. But that I saw that video and I was like so inspired by their playing and delivery, and I think that hit me at a point where I was kind of burned out on punk and mostly listening to reggae and rock steady and soul, and blues, the old blues came in along with like hillbilly and early American music from the 20s and 30s.
Sure, that, sure.
All that kind of really grabbed me at that point.
Yeah.
Well,
one could say too that like punk music and early roots blues music are not too far apart.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, for one, they're both, and this is not a bad thing at all. I'm not trying to denigrate the type of music you play, but they're both quite simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not simple to play, but they're simple to the ear in where, like, you know, they're not using a whole bunch of different chord progressions. They're mm-hmm. There's not several different bridges mm-hmm. in the span of like 2 minutes or something like that, you know? And then also, like, lyrically, too, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Roots and punk both singing about strife and personal conflict and things like that. So, I mean, you didn't make a huge jump. It's just quieter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, it's really similar, I think.
Yeah.
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 It's simple. A lot of the songs that I write are maybe just one chord uh-huh. with a melody that works around that chord.
Sure.
And yeah, the format of the lyrics and the singing is pretty similar to punk.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I always was drawn to punk that sounded really raw and immediate and you get that quality out of old blues recordings, especially the field recordings.
Where analog,
it's just,
man.
Yeah. Just roll tape and see what happens.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that sound. That's why I have like all this old equipment. Like that was, you know, I could never go back to a solid state amplifier. Right?
Yeah.
Like it just bugs me. The sound of it just bugs me. You know, and a lot of people would say that they can't tell the difference, but I think you can, like, even if you just take the time to, like, listen to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like an analog recording, even just vinyl over CD or something like that, or vinyl over MP3, you can hear the imperfections, right? And that's what's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it gives it a little bit of flavor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And you're this album, More Primitive, is definitely full of flavor.
Thank you.
yeah. I really enjoy it. I love that analog sound. So you started like mainly getting into blues and roots music when you moved to Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start really playing it?
Started playing banjo and in
banjo.
Albuquerque.
You are so white.
I know. Yeah, that was my introduction to playing early music was the banjo. Although the banjo is so black as well because it's from Africa.
Is it really?
It is.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew that.
That's the, well, they call it the original American instrument.
Okay.
But there's no denying that it was a mutation of gourd instruments that came from Africa that had a short drone string on them.
Sure.
The five-string banjo is unique because of that short string.
Right.
Kind of sets it apart from a guitar or something like that.
Yeah.
And that short string is made to just create a drone. And so there's, you know, a lot of studies have been done or, you know, conducted about that connection. I don't know. It's tenuous, like what actual instrument made the leap from gourd to banjo.
Sure.
At what point that happened, but it's an African as well as an American instrument. There's an interesting collection of music called Black Banjo Songsters.
Uh-huh.
It was a woman's thesis project, but she went into South Carolina and recorded. She sought out black banjo players. This was in the 70s, I think, maybe up 70s till 80s, 90s. But she found black banjo players who were playing a lot of traditional songs, but she found amazing music in that journey, and she wrote her thesis on it, and I've read the thesis. It's, you know, it's really academic, but
really?
All about that connection. It's an interesting crossover of music between hillbilly blues and African music.
Yeah. So does the African version of the banjo look pretty similar? Like, does it?
The similarity is the short. The short string
is the fifth string.
And on a gourd instrument, it would typically be maybe two long strings and one short string. So it'd be a three-string instrument.
Gotcha.
And it'd be a stick neck and some kind of a gourd or a hollow log or something with a skin stretched over it.
Huh.
But the only, you know, so the difference with a banjo is you have... Typically, you have a bent wood rim like a drum form.
Right.
You know, that serves the same purpose as a gourd. And early on, it was a skin stretched over a wood rim tacked on. And then the necks became more refined, you know, with a level fretboard. And eventually, frets came into play.
Yeah. So they made it more like a guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because guitars were already around, right?
Yeah.
They had like lutes, and I mean, it all started with the lute.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. No. Oh, man. I didn't know that. I didn't know that they started over in Africa.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's considered the source of
So you start playing banjo.
Yeah.
You get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And then I kind of start feeling more drawn to blues than hillbilly and fiddle tunes. And start playing more guitar and like figuring out how to finger pick and
how do you emulate that sound?
Yeah, and just listening to recordings and figuring out how they played stuff, and also realizing that I'm not the greatest at like finger picking. I'll never be Mississippi John Hurt or anyone like Blind Blake. I can't do that stuff. But maybe I can pick something out that's an original of mine that sort of draws from that and maybe can capture that spirit that inspired me.
Yeah, yeah. That's great, man.
Yeah.
I was just trying to finger pick earlier today, and I can't. Like, I've got one pattern that I can finger pick in, and that's it. You know, it was something that I figured out when I was in college, and then that's all I learned how to do, you know?
It's tough to get it down to the point where you aren't thinking about what your hand's doing, your right hand, your picking hand. And, and that's when it starts sounding cool, when you can get your thumb to play a rhythm or whatever, and your fingers to do something different and become syncopated, and suddenly it sounds like two people playing or
you can play that kind of like that like drone string or bass, you know, with your thumb, and your fingers can be doing all the work.
Yeah I love listening to John Fahey. Have you listened to him?
Oh yeah,
he's a great finger picker.
Totally.
Also, he draws a lot from early blues and a master of like separating rhythm and melody so that it sounds like there's two people playing.
It sounds like you've taken this like this blues and roots music thing to a very academic level. Like you are like a student of this type of music, it sounds like. Like, you were really, really interested in, you know, in reading up on, like, the banjo and the origins of it and stuff like that, and reading theses about, you know, about this stuff. That's very commendable. Why didn't you major in music?
I don't know. I should have. Like, at some point, I was
making
art.
You can have a degree in music.
I know. I was making art, and my art pieces were getting bigger and bigger, and I couldn't sell them or anything. So I started just wondering what I was doing with art, and I thought, like, what can I do that doesn't take up any space but also has the same inspiration and I get the same excitement out of as making art. And that's I think that pushed me into music more, so I wouldn't have like any music is what you make it, like it's in the moment, and for me for the most part. And I think at that point I wasn't, that's around when I moved out to the country too, and I lived in the middle of nowhere for 4 years. And
like outside of Albuquerque?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. This was near, the nearest town was Silver City, New Mexico.
Okay. I have no idea, like, any of that geography.
It's the southwest part of New Mexico.
Okay.
There's not much out there. And that's where I focused a lot on music. And
why'd you move out there? What was the catalyst?
Kind of wanted to get out of the city and try living on the country. A good friend of mine owns property there, and he was happy to have me live there. I moved down there with my girlfriend at the time from Albuquerque, and he was like, "Stay on my land as long as you want. I'm happy to have someone there, you know, to watch over it."
Yeah,
and it was an established camping kind of thing, back to the land sort of thing.
Yeah,
we didn't have running water, but
so were you staying in?
I bought a travel trailer.
Okay
And pulled that down, and then I built a shack off the side of that.
Wow.
And that became the Lonesome Shack. That's hence the name.
Really?
Yeah.
That's where it comes from. No way. That's so cool. So you didn't have running. I'm sorry, I cut you off, but you said you didn't have running water, but you had something else.
We had power.
You had power.
Yeah.
Okay. Just from like what, generator or something?
No, there was a power pole there. It's kind of near a highway that's not major, but
yeah. But wait a minute, did you string up your own power to this thing?
I didn't. I strung up power to the shack.
Yeah.
And wired it from the pole that was there, but I wasn't pirating power from that.
That's what I was wondering. I was just like, wait a minute, did you just like throw a line up there or something? And oh man,
I've heard of those vampire clips that squatters use that you can just clamp them into a power line and then draw your own power off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bastards. No. Well, that's really cool, man. Like, so how long did you live there?
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah.
With your girlfriend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys married now? Or are you still
together? No, we split up. We split up after we moved. We moved from there to Bisbee, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And after that, we went our separate ways. I decided to go to luthier school to learn how to build guitars and fix guitars in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And she stayed in that shack for a while. And now she lives in Albuquerque.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and then after I finished luthier school, I worked at the school for the next class as an assistant, and then I got a job at Trading Musician.
Oh, cool.
So that brought me back home.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you lived in this I can't get over this shack thing. Like, this is always I was watching this show with my brother back at my parents' house, this like Alaskan reality show or whatever it is. And it's all about these people who just kind of live off the land,
like,
right?
Homesteaders.
Yeah, something like that. And it was so interesting to see how they, first of all, used everything that they had there at their disposal, you know, and they slaughtered this cow that they had. And then they used every single bit of the cow, right? They made soap out of the fat. They skinned it, and they were, you know, tanning the hide and everything like that. So were you doing stuff like that? Living off the land, or were you close enough
where you
could drive into a grocery store and get stuff?
Yeah, the nearest store of any size was an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
So we'd go there. We'd try to get enough to be at home for 2 weeks or so.
Uh-huh. And not have to go in.
Yeah.
Town. Yeah.
But yeah, I did. I was really into the Foxfire books. There's like a series of books called Foxfire.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know those?
Yeah. I remember hearing about them. I don't think I ever read them.
It's all, homesteading knowledge and folklore, and some of that stuff I tried out myself, like woodworking, a lot of woodworking stuff that I'd read about in there, and just harvesting local plants, making preserves, and, you know, eating wild foods.
Sure.
And
so
mainly,
you guys were making a go of it.
Yeah.
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 That's freaking great, man.
Mm-hmm.
Was it tough? It must have been tough.
Yeah, it was really tough at times.
Yeah.
But it was really fun, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you guys... I mean, what did you guys do for fun in the shack?
Played music.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Your girlfriend was into music, too?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you have any communication with the outside world other than having to go into...
Yeah, I mean, there was... I would call my family... I'd go drive. There was a payphone about 5 miles away.
Yeah.
Then I'd go and call up my family, and I'd write letters, and usually I'd visit people once a year. I started doing some other jobs, like I traveled to do blueberry harvest in Maine 1 year to make money.
Yeah.
And I also worked on an apple orchard another year in New Hampshire.
Cool.
That I had my friend who was in that band. I was in the first band I was in. He became a cook, a chef at an apple orchard in New Hampshire. And I went up to work a season there when he was cooking. And that was amazing. Really hard work. But
oh, sure. Yeah.
Awesome food. On my birthday, he made me Ethiopian food and with injera and all kinds of stuff. He bought me a bottle of Jameson and a set of horseshoes.
Nice.
And, you know, it was one of the best birthdays.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool spot. But so I do things like that to make money or yeah, just to get yeah. out of there for a bit. Because mm-hmm. it was tough. It was really isolated.
Yeah.
And ultimately it was too isolated to live there. And
is that why you moved out?
Like, yeah.
That's why you had to get out?
Yeah. For me, I needed to do other things. Yeah. And like, also, I wanted to play music for a living, and I made a run at that at some point, and then that I was like, this is gonna be really hard, so I need to find a trade that is in my interest, but
right
so, and I'm into woodworking, and I actually built some banjos at that time, and mm-hmm. so that's when I got into that luthier school, and
yeah
it's kind of brought me back to the yeah. city slowly.
So what was that? What was that translation? That transition like for you? Like when you finally move away from the, you know, the shack, and you come back into the city. Like I know that you once every couple weeks or something you go in, you would go into town and buy what you guys needed. But like living back in that has got to be a pretty intense transition, right?
Yeah, it was. Especially landing in Phoenix.
Uh-huh. That's
which
huge.
the first big city I lived in after that.
Yeah.
Experience. Although I had visited different cities, but yeah, it was a little shocking to come back to that.
Just the noise, I was also, and everything.
The noise, the yeah. The tension and the lack of public space and
oh yeah
yeah because when I lived out there a lot of my days were spent just walking in the middle of nowhere and just like following a creek bed or something
sure,
and see where
sure.
this goes, see what I find,
yeah,
and you know always leads to some amazing discovery, like, whoa, here's a cave or here's a rock formation or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Had a lot of time to explore and just soak that in. But, yeah, I think I adapted pretty fast to the city.
Yeah.
Because it's familiar in a way, too.
Sure. Well, it's not like it was totally unknown.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And at that point, I was kind of craving to get back to having more people around.
Yeah, so. I don't think I am the type of person that would have that in me, where I could live isolated. I'm the type of person. I'm the type of personality. I need to be around people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I need interaction. You know.
Yeah.
I don't think that would work for me, man. Yeah, but that's really cool that you experienced that. That's really cool that you did it, you know? Yeah, I'm impressed. Yeah. I'm very impressed, Ben.
All right.
So what's coming up for Loathsome Shack, man?
What's
coming up for the band?
Well, we got some local shows. We're trying to... I'm writing songs right now.
Yeah.
And we hope to record in the next few months. Probably with Johnny Goss again. I haven't actually talked to Johnny about it, but that's what I think. It worked out so well with him that I think we'd like to do that again. And I'd like to finish writing a new album and do some more touring. We just did a tour about a month ago. We got back, but we drove down to Mississippi. Played a blues festival in Mississippi,
man.
And then played New Orleans and toured on our way back.
Yeah.
we're probably going to tour in May in Europe.
Oh, nice.
There's a guy working on that, and nothing's confirmed yet, but
yeah,
probably mostly in Germany, but
awesome. That'll be really cool.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes peeled. Go to their website, lonesomeshack.com. Is there anywhere else that you guys are at?
I should mention we have a show. Our next show is January 8th
okay.
at the Tractor.
Awesome. Here in Seattle.
Yeah. With Inley, who's an awesome local band.
Yeah, yeah.
And ooh. Sam Doors, who is one of the songwriters in the Deslons. They're cool. They're a band out of New Orleans. They just came through town on tour with Old Crow Medicine Show.
Oh, nice.
But he's a great guy and good songwriter.
Well, that's great, man. January 8th.
Yeah.
Tractor. Mm-hmm. Get your tickets now. And and keep up with you guys. Do you guys have Twitter as well?
We do. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Awesome. Just look them up. Look them up, people. LonesomeShack.com. You can find all the links there. And plus, we'll put a link up on our website as well at the on the show blog. So do that, right? And go to our website, www.air-raid.net. We're going to have that new website up pretty soon, if it's not up already, by the time you guys hear this. But it's looking good, man. I'm pretty stoked about it. Now, if you click on the Archives tab, like always, you can hear all past 225 episodes with people like Chris Walla from Death Cab for Cutie. How about Mike Birbiglia or Pete Holmes or Eddie Pepitone or the band Surfer Blood or who else? The list goes on and on. How about Lonesome Shack? Ben Todd of Lonesome Shack right now? That's like 12 layers of Inception right there. Ben, thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I hope you enjoy this mighty cold that we're having.
I will.
Out there. All right. We're going to go out today with music from More Primitive by Lonesome Shack, and this song is called Rex off of their album. All right, everybody. Have a great one. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.